inevitable. And the sooner Colombia sees that, the more embarrassment and shame it can save itself. You know, can you even call Colombia a university anymore? A university has the obligation to protect its students. A university has the obligation to stand by the core values of academic institutions, freedom of expression and speech.
Well, we're going to have to leave that question there, but the film comes out around the country starting tonight in New York and then going beyond. I want to thank you all for being with us. Munir Atallah, producer of the encampments, Grant Miner, president of student workers at Columbia UAW, just fired and expelled by Columbia, and Sueda Polat, graduate student in human rights at Columbia University. That does it for our broadcast. And we want to share our deepest condolences with Democracy Now! Co-host, dear friend Nermeen Sheikh, whose father passed earlier this morning. Najmuddin Sheikh was Pakistan's former foreign secretary, ambassador to many countries. The reason why Nermeen grew up around the world, he's survived by his beloved wife, Rana, of more than half a century, his children, Nermeen and Nader. I'm so glad, Nermeen, your family was together for your dad's 85th birthday, and what a gift you gave him by being at his side with your brother and mother these last few painful weeks in Karachi. The funeral services for Najmuddin Sheikh are taking place in Karachi, Pakistan, as we broadcast. Blessings. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Pathways, a show featuring conversations with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. Join me, host Paul O'Brien, or my co-host Donald Altman, every Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. You can find out more about the show or listen to the program archive at kboo.fm/pathways.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and the nonprofit Oregon Potters Association, presenting its annual event, the Ceramic Showcase, with the Gathering of the Guilds, April 25th through 27th at the Oregon Convention Center. More info available at ceramicshowcase.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon Senate passed a bill that aims to ban housing discrimination based on immigration status.
The Bureau of Land Management has fast-tracked an expansive lithium mining exploration project in southeastern Oregon, with only 5 days open to public comment.
And in international news, a 7.7 magnitude earthquake hit Myanmar and Thailand, killing at least 150 people so far.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 28th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Southeast Oregon Lithium Project has been under consideration for 3 years. Now, the Trump administration is giving people 4 days until Monday, March 30th, to comment before proceeding. The lithium project that Australian company Jindalee Resources plans to execute entails digging down 800 feet into the earth across 7,200 acres in Malheur County by the Oregon-Nevada border in order to search for lithium deposits in the area. The Bureau of Land Management is only allowing a total of 5 days for a public comment period after releasing the 103-page environmental assessment for the exploratory lithium mine on Paiute lands. The push for U.S. resource extraction comes as the Trump administration attempts to fast-track mining and drilling on public lands. This also comes as a rise in tariffs makes imports of raw materials from other countries more expensive. The BLM held a month-long public comment period in July of 2023 concerning the Jindalee Resources lithium exploration project. These comments have reportedly been folded into the current proposal. If people wish to submit a comment about the high-tech lithium exploration plan of operation, they can go to eplanning.blm.gov.
On Monday, the Oregon Senate passed Senate Bill 599, which bans housing discrimination based on immigration status. The bill allows landlords to continue to verify identities for rental applicants and to run credit checks on them. But the bill would make it so that landlords couldn't require forms of ID that are tied to citizenship or permanent residency. Current Oregon legislation prohibits discrimination for race or national origin, but this will be the first protection for immigration status, which has recently been under public political attack. The bill passed on a vote of 21-8. The bill outlines the many forms of ID that landlords must accept, including Social Security cards, birth certificates, green cards, travel and immigration visas, taxpayer IDs, passports, driver's license, and other governmental IDs, and reasonably verifiable non-governmental IDs. The bill also bans landlords from asking about or disclosing the immigration status of a tenant, rental applicant, or household member. The bill's chief sponsor, Senate Winsvee Campos, who represents Oregon Senate District 18, said, quote, "Immigrant communities throughout the state pay taxes, support local businesses, and strengthen our economy every single day. This bill is a reasonable and fair solution to ensure that all Oregonians, regardless of where they were born or are from, have the opportunity to secure safe housing," unquote.
Portland City Council will hear two housing-related items at their meeting on Wednesday. First is a resolution to study so-called social housing and how it could be implemented in Portland. Social housing is permanently affordable, non-market housing that is publicly or community-owned. It is commonly used internationally and is starting to be adopted in the U.S. Portland declared a housing emergency in 2015, and city data from 2023 showed that over half of all renters in Portland are cost-burdened. The proposed resolution passed out of committee by a unanimous vote for the full council to hear on Wednesday. If the council adopts the resolution, the city administrator will study other models of social housing and how they could be adapted to Portland. The proposal was co-sponsored by councilors Candace Avalos and Mitch Green. Here's an excerpt of Green's remarks at the Homelessness and Housing Committee meeting this week.
I also want to acknowledge that Portlanders are weary of the study, plan cycle that generates reports that may sit on a shelf and never be used, and that too many Portlanders are suffering from a housing crisis that burdens their household budgets, or worse, leaves them out in the cold. But make no mistake, it is my intention that this city council will be remembered as the body that looked at the dire state of housing affordability and said enough, no more. We're bringing every tool we have to the problem to address affordability at its root causes. I believe that for social housing in this city to stand the test of time and to deliver for Portlanders, we owe it to ourselves to get it right.
That was Portland City Councilor Mitch Green of District 4, who co-sponsored the resolution to study how social housing might be used in Portland.
Also on the agenda for Portland City Council on Wednesday is an ordinance to ban the use of anti-competitive algorithms to drive rent prices. Oregon is one of 10 states in an antitrust lawsuit against the company RealPage, which alleges that the company trains an AI algorithm on confidential information to artificially inflate rents. The resolution was introduced by Councilor Angelita Murillo and is intended to, quote, safeguard tenants, promote fair competition, and ensure market stability, end quote. Business groups, developers, and their lobbyists oppose the measure, saying it could mean a drop in needed development in Portland. The resolution passed out of committee on a 3-1 vote. City Councilor Jamie Dumphy emphasized that city government has to repeatedly clean up the mess created by tech companies like Uber, Airbnb, Amazon, Ticketmaster, and others. This is no different. Here's an excerpt of this remarks.
Today, we're talking about removing a tool that facilitates illegal price fixing using private data. This should be an obvious fix. Instead, we've heard from expensive lobbyists representing moneyed interests who imply that their clients should have practically unfettered access to manipulating a failed market to extract maximum profits regardless of the community cost, or else no one will ever build more housing in Portland ever again. The social contract has been broken. I read testimony from landlords lamenting that she used to have deep personal relationships with her tenants and would attend their quinceañeras and birthdays, but now she feels compelled to operate her housing business by the book. Let me be clear. Yes, that is exactly what this government believes you should be doing. I read in testimony that price fixing is already illegal. And yet, when enough potential profit is dangled before moneyed interests, it's predictable that those tech companies will push the bounds of legality until something breaks. Something being illegal hasn't stopped Ticketmaster, Airbnb, or Uber from trying to do whatever they want in our city. Today, we take a small but meaningful step in drawing our line in the sand and saying enough, and I vote aye.
That was an excerpt from Portland City Councilor Jamie Dumphy's remarks about an ordinance to ban rental price-fixing algorithms. Both ordinance and the resolution to study social housing will be before Portland City Council on Wednesday, April 2nd, starting at 9:30 a.m. Portlanders can register to testify on these items on the City Council website at portland.gov/council/agenda.
Communities and conservation groups have won a court order forcing the Washington Department of Ecology to rewrite pollution discharge permit regulations for concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, to better protect water resources and public health. Mark Richardson has more on the story.
The Washington State Pollution Control Hearings Board is ordering state officials to rewrite pollution discharge permit regulations for concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. The order was issued after a challenge from community and conservation groups complaining that previous regulations violated state and federal law. The complaint alleged that the state failed to control the discharge of excess nutrients, bacteria, and other pollutants from dairy factory farms. Tyler Lobdell with Food and Water Watch says the state must better protect its water, wildlife, and communities.
The state of Washington hasn't been requiring what are called nutrient management plans or manure pollution prevention plans to be robustly developed by every CAFO, and they haven't required those plans to be available to the public to make sure they're actually doing what they're supposed to do.
The ruling order to the State Department of Ecology to require CAFOs to control pollution from animal waste runoff. CAFOs are industrial farming and dairy operations that can generate substantial amounts of animal waste, which must be appropriately managed to prevent water and air pollution. Lobdell says it's essential that the order stipulates the public's right to review and comment on all regulations before they're issued, noting that the state has a poor track record of protecting waterways from nitrate pollution. He says having the EPA involved strengthens the process.
The state of Washington issues a single combined permit that covers both the Federal Clean Water Act, which is authority delegated by US EPA to Department of Ecology, but it also covers Washington state law, which is more expansive.
Several conservation groups, including the Waterkeeper Alliance, the Center for Food Safety, Friends of Tepanish Creek, and the Sierra Club, participated in filing the complaint. The appellants were represented by Western Environmental Law Center. For Washington News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Six tribes have formed a coalition to protect Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in southern Utah, which was shrunk by President Trump in his first term. Jason Harris served 17 years in tribal government and is now serving Catawba native cuisine from his food truck. Indigenous language activists in Ireland have made strides this year as Belfast's Grand Central Station announces plans to install signage in Irish as well as the King's English. With these stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Six tribes have formed a coalition to protect Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in southern Utah. As David Condos reports for the Mountain West News Bureau, the group's working to conserve tribal homelands.
President Donald Trump shrunk both Grand Staircase Escalante and nearby Bears Ears National Monument in 2017 during his first term. And some people worry history could repeat itself. Hank Stevens is a member of the Intertribal Coalition and part of Utah's Navajo Nation.
With that new administration coming in, you know, there's concerns that we're probably going to have two monuments being shrunk again.
The administration issued an order last month to review national monuments as part of a push to expand gas production and mining on federal lands. Still, Stevens is optimistic the federal government will collaborate with the coalition and make sure Native voices are heard. I'm David Kondos.
When you've served 17 years in tribal government, what's the next step? Well, if you're Jason Harris, you start a food truck. Brian Bull talked to the former Catawba assistant chief, whose business, Bow and Arrow, roams South Carolina.
Harris and his wife, Melissa, have both worked in tribal government and still consider themselves ambassadors of a sort. Only instead of discussing policy over the table, they share Catawba history and culture over the counter.
One of the things that we have not been good at, especially as Catawbas, we don't share our culture as well as we probably should. So that's kind of given us an opportunity to answer people's questions. You know, not only the food, that's just a starting point, but we can actually get into other conversations. It helps bring our communities together even more.
Many visitors to the Bow and Arrow are non-natives, so Harris feels this is a great way to connect with others. The menu has fry bread as the basis for its entrees.
We have the Bow, which is a ground beef-based Indian taco with the trimmings that go with that. And then we have the Arrow, which is chicken on fry bread. Then we have a bison Indian taco. We hadn't seen a whole lot of that out there in Indian country. And then we do a strawberry dish that is my wife's grandmother's recipe, and it is just out of this world.
The Catawba are South Carolina's only federally recognized tribe, so Harris says it's great to represent his culture and share his passion for good food at the same time.
We get to feed people, everybody's got to eat, and then we get to share a little bit of our culture too, so it's been really nice to do that.
The Harris's black and turquoise truck roams the areas on and near the Catawba Reservation, sharing Native cuisine to powwow crowds and passersby alike. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
It's all aboard the victory train for Indigenous language activists in Ireland. Show McPolin reports on signs of hope at the island's largest integrated transportation hub.
Chucky Arla, get the Brits a lot of one-way ticket, please. I've lost my bus pass.
It's been a good year for Ireland's indigenous language. The Irish hip-hop band Kneecap is showcasing the 2,500-year-old language at high-profile festivals this year like Coachella and Glastonbury. And this week in Kneecap's hometown of Belfast, officials in charge of the new Grand Central Station announced plans to install signage with Irish in addition to the King's English. Irish language equality has become a political tool in the historically violent showdown between those who favor a united Ireland and those who wish to keep Northern Ireland as part of the United Kingdom. That's why a handful of far-right politicians are trying to suppress the new signs. More than 2 million people on the island, or 30% of the population, say they have some ability to speak Irish. For National Native News, I'm Sean McPolin in Ireland.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue with a high of 57 degrees. Today in history, in 1979, a coolant leak at the Three Mile Island's Unit 2 nuclear reactor outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, leads to core overheating and a partial meltdown. It is the worst commercial nuclear power accident in U.S. history. The quote of the day is from American philosopher Daniel Dennett, born this day in 1942. He wrote, quote, "If you can approach the world's complexities, both its glories and its horrors, with an attitude of humble curiosity, acknowledging that however deeply you have seen, you have only scratched the surface, you will find worlds within worlds, beauties you could not heretofore imagine, and your own mundane preoccupations will shrink to proper size, not all that important in the greater scheme of things."
The
The Department of Health and Human Services prepares to cut 10,000 more jobs. Election officials are unsure if a Trump executive order will be enacted, and Republicans in Congress say they aim to cut NPR and PBS funding. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The mass firings are likely unlawful, will likely be challenged in court, and we also know it does nothing to improve the health, safety, and economic well-being of the American people. It will hurt it.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says it's unclear if announced firings at the Department of Health and Human Services will happen or what their result would be. Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has announced 10,000 staffers will be dismissed, doubling the total of already announced layoffs and voluntary departures. One previous agency head says the firings seem to be based on the delusion that employees there aren't actually doing anything, and others say it could mean a man-made disaster dealing with problems like the current measles outbreak. Meanwhile, election experts doubt President Donald Trump's election-related executive order will go into wide effect. The Constitution gives the job of election administration to the states. While Congress has passed laws that force or entice states, that typically takes more than a presidential order. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says reaction at the state level will be partisan.
Unfortunately, I think you've seen some Republicans. I saw a statement from the Secretary of State of Florida who said that this was welcome. I don't know that he would have said the same thing if President Biden had tried to do an executive order of this type.
Then President Joe Biden signed a voting order after a related bill failed in the Senate but was met by stiff GOP resistance. Trump's executive order requires a passport or similar document as proof of citizenship to vote. Critics charge it would depress turnout, noting even most Trump supporters don't have a passport. States like New York are considering legislation to broaden voting rights. Along with almost $11 million for voter outreach, lawmakers are debating enhanced automatic voter registration and protecting voting for eligible folks awaiting trial behind bars. Stephen Choi with New Yorkers for Inclusive Democracy says it's a reaction to moves like Trump's.
They're going to try to make sure they use these myths about fraud to try to cut down on voting rights, especially for communities of color, for Black, Latino, Asian communities.
The heads of National Public Radio and the Public Broadcasting System testified before the House Department of Government Efficiency Subcommittee, with some conservatives again agitating to cut their funding. Committee member and Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene says the broadcasters have become radical left echo chambers.
It is actively uses taxpayer funds to push some of the most radical left positions, like featuring a drag queen on the show Let's Learn, a show targeted toward young children ages 3 to 8 years old.
By the end of the hearing, entitled Anti-American Airwaves, holding the heads of NPR and PBS accountable, Green announced the House will move to cut all of their federal funds. President Trump withdrew the nomination of New York Representative Elise Stefanik to be UN ambassador. House Republicans say an open seat in a possible swing district could threaten their razor-thin majority. Trump says he may consider the close ally for a future position. Stefanik has been the New York 21st District Representative since 2014 with strong support, in spite of the seat being previously held by Democrats. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A powerful earthquake rocked Myanmar and Thailand today, destroying buildings and at least one major bridge and dam. At least 144 people were killed in Myanmar and 10 in the Thai capital of Bangkok, where a high-rise under construction collapsed. The death tolls are expected to rise. The 7.7 magnitude quake's epicenter was near Mandalay, Myanmar's second-largest city. Aftershocks followed, one of them measuring at 6.4 magnitude. The full extent of the damage was not immediately clear, particularly in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, one of the world's poorest countries, which is also embroiled in a civil war in which more than 3 million people have already been displaced by fighting. Information coming out of the country is tightly controlled. The earthquake brought down multiple buildings in Mandalay, including one of the largest monasteries in the city, also damaging the former royal palace. A dam burst in the city as well, causing water levels to rise in the lowland areas. Myanmar's government said blood is desperately needed in the hardest hit areas. Despite civil unrest, the government appears ready to accept outside assistance. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that the world body is mobilizing to respond to Myanmar's appeal for international help. But concerns about how rescuers would even reach some areas which are difficult to access due to the war remain. In Thailand, a 33-story building under construction collapsed. Injured people were rushed away on gurneys, and hospital beds were wheeled outside onto a sidewalk. the city's elevated rapid transit system and subway shut down. While the area involved in Thailand is prone to earthquakes, they are usually not this powerful. Bangkok's greater metropolitan area is home to more than 17 million people, many of whom live in high-rise apartments. Geoscience experts said the earthquake was shallow at 6.2 miles. Shallower earthquakes do tend to cause more damage. The earthquake was felt in China and caused some damage and injuries in the city of Ruili, which borders Myanmar.
Since spring 2024, the H5N1 avian influenza has affected humans and animals in the U.S. and Canada. A new poll finds most Americans are concerned about bird flu's impact and egg prices. Nadia Ramlagan has more in West Virginia.
West Virginians are more concerned about bird flu's impact on grocery costs than health implications. And Republican voters are more likely to distrust CDC information about the virus, according to a new poll from the health policy research and news organization KFF. Nearly 9 in 10 adults across parties, race, and ethnicity, and household income levels are very or somewhat concerned that bird flu will increase the cost of food in the U.S. Rising economic pressure has households more worried about paying for housing, gas, transportation, and everyday expenses, explains Audrey Carney, a senior survey analyst with KFF.
We found that only half of the public says that they are really hearing a lot about bird flu on a day-to-day basis. So it might not be resonating in the way of health, but it definitely is resonating when they go grocery shopping.
Since 2022, officials have identified just 2 backyard flocks, around 260 birds in the state, impacted by the virus. Earlier this year, the West Virginia Department of Agriculture issued a suspension on all poultry exhibitions and sales statewide, calling the move a precautionary measure. Carney adds one of the biggest takeaways from the data is Americans now have different levels of trust between community experts they are interacting with on a daily basis and major institutions.
Messages from people's doctors are going to be the most well-received and probably the most effective on that front.
Currently, the CDC recommends people avoid close contact with sick animals and avoid unpasteurized milk products as precautions against bird flu, while eggs purchased from grocery stores are considered safe. Since April 2024, 70 human cases of bird flu have been reported in the U.S. 41 cases were associated with exposure to sick dairy cows, and 26 were associated with exposure to poultry. This is Nadia Ramlagan for West Virginia News Service.
A California couple ditched gas, converting their home to run entirely on clean electricity. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. About 3 years ago, Robert Whitehair of San Mateo, California, had the gas meter removed from his home and the line capped.
I had the great fun of removing the gas pipes from my house myself. Got a couple of pipe wrenches and start removing them, and that was great fun.
It was a moment to celebrate. Whitehair and his wife had transitioned their home to run entirely on clean electricity. First, they'd made their home more energy efficient by adding insulation and switching out their light bulbs with LEDs. Then they installed solar panels and a battery backup system, which provides more power than the home uses.
We actually get a check back every year for a couple $100 from our local utility provider.
And they switched out their gas appliances with an electric induction stove, an electric heat pump water heater, and an electric heat pump HVAC system. Whitehair says the couple hopes to inspire others to do the same. They've put a sign out front highlighting that the home is all electric and given tours to more than 100 people.
Some of the people who come in are excited because they want to do it themselves, but we still have people who've never been in an all-electric home. So it's just inspirational and sometimes surprising.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. On this edition of The Puzzle, wordplay and a particular fictional hotel.
It's time for The Puzzle. Last week, I asked you to take the first two-thirds of a sign of winter, followed by the last third of a sign of spring, to get a synonym for unpredictable. Well, the answer is capricious, which can be formed from Capricorn and Taurus. Our winner this week is Jasmine, who listens to KBOO in Portland, Oregon. Navigating by the stars at night, navigating by the stars at night, and the na na na. Navigating by the stars at night, navigating by the stars at night. For the new puzzle, start with something that you don't want in a hotel, followed by a British term for something that you would find in many hotels. Remove the last letter, and phonetically, you now have something that you could find in a particular fictional hotel. So again, start with something that you don't want in a hotel, followed by a British term for something that you might find in many hotels. Remove the last letter, and phonetically, you have something that you could find in a particular fictional hotel. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
As I lie in my Sheffield hotel, where the lights of the disco shine through.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of March 24th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 28th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking